All right, everybody. Welcome to Life is Awkward. Today's episode is brought to you by Alien Life. There's bacteria on Mars, guys. The debate is over. And now your host, Katie Hamilton.
You're listening to River West Radio. This is Life is Awkward. We have a special guest with us today. I'm going to let him introduce himself.
Special guest.
Everyone's so special that comes on this show.
Special sauce.
Hey, everyone out there in podcast land. This is Zach McLean. I should probably tell him a little bit about myself.
Tell us a little about yourself.
That'd be cool. I live here in Milwaukee in the River West area. I'm a designer, a filmmaker, photographer, and actor. Zach of all trades, as I like to say. Somebody already has that website too.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Is it a K or an H?
With an H.
Oh,
and they don't do they do like three things: landscaping, cooking, and like one other thing. And I was like, you don't deserve that website.
You need at least five things.
Yeah. Like, come on, man. Jeez. So seriously. Well, thank you guys for having me on the show. I appreciate it.
It was really great to have you, man.
Thanks, man. Absolutely.
Talking about it for a while.
Cool.
Yeah.
Aww.
Finally back from travels from space.
Where we found that bacteria.
Yeah. How is space?
Space is amazing.
Space shirt on.
I do. Yeah. Ever since I was a kid, I always wanted to be an astronaut. I thought it was the coolest job. And then I learned the incredible amounts of mathematics that you have to do. Because if you think about an astronaut, like they have to be physically fit, because being out in space is extremely demanding. Second, they're all experts in their fields. And third, they're out there alone by themselves. So if something goes wrong, they either have to, you know, they have to know all the safety procedures, they have to know how everything operates, and you're basically floating inside of a giant tin can that operates as a computer, but it's thinner than a tin can.
That's right.
So it's like, best of luck to our best and brightest. We're going to send them into the most dangerous part of, the cosmos, off of Earth, where we don't belong.
It's like wrapped in tinfoil.
It is. It's just layers of tinfoil when you look at like the ISS or a space station. And, you know, yeah, we thought, for like a rocket or something like that, it's like, oh, by the way, we're going to put a few 100,000 pounds of fuel on the bottom of it. Good luck to you, you know? So, but no, as a kid, I always wanted to be an astronaut. I thought it was the coolest job, and it is the coolest job, not in the world. Job. It's the coolest job out of this world.
Outside of the world.
Something I learned recently that I thought, I was like, oh, maybe there's a chance for me to work there, was that NASA also operates an underwater station where a lot of astronauts, it's like their summer job, if you think about it. It's like, oh, this is what I do when off season. A lot of them study and operate underwater.
Yeah.
Which is incredible, because there's just so much more to learn in the ocean that we don't know about yet. You know, one of the best things, I think it was Chris Hadfield, said that if you want to see a good chance of what it is aliens look like, look at octopuses, many octopus, and or creatures at the bottom of the ocean.
Yeah,
because you know everybody says that life started from the oceans and then came onto land. Sorry, homeschoolers, but and so if you look at the ocean, where there's just so many variables, you know, geothermic vents, there's extreme temperatures, there's darkness, there's light in some places, different varieties of plant and animal life, it gives you such an amazing opportunity for evolution. And then you think about the scope of the cosmos, and it blows your mind. It's unimaginable. It's like that school experiment where, you know, the students were talking about, you know, the number of victims of war or the Holocaust, and they said, oh, it's like, you know, in the millions. And the student asked, like, well, what is 11 million or what does 12 million look like? Mm. And you try to think about the scope of the cosmos. You can't even imagine it. It's it's bigger than you could ever dream of. And so being able to explore that and get the technology to see that is just amazing to me. And to think about being there, or getting the chance to go up and be there, was always a dream of mine as a kid. I just thought it was super, super cool. Plus, you get a spaceship. Like, who doesn't want a spaceship? Like,
you're even wearing a NASA shirt. I just realized that. Like, as you were talking about it, I was like, whoa.
I'm wearing a NASA shirt right now. But it, like, and for those of you that are, I know Katie is using my Bitmoji on the website. My Bitmoji is way better shape than I am. I was going to go with like the fatter, rounder Bitmoji, but it looked like a Bitmoji wearing a fat suit. And I was like, no, that's not good. So I went, like, my Bitmoji's kind of chubby. No, I'm much bigger than my Bitmoji. Well, so I'm uncomfortable with it.
Everyone's bigger than their Bitmoji. Bitmoji's a cartoon.
Bitmoji's like, you're like, yeah, it's like the Barbie of.
But yeah, I'm wearing
the Barbie of you.
Yeah. I'm wearing a NASA shirt right now. And anybody that would see me walking down the street wearing the shirt would just look at me and be like, that guy doesn't work at NASA. Come on.
You never know, man.
I wonder if there's jobs not astronaut related. I could be a great NASA. If anyone from NASA is listening to this, I would make a great janitor or like food service. I could do that. Yeah, absolutely.
I think that, there's got to be like
take photos.
Food tester.
I could. Oh my gosh, I could. I could be a photographer at NASA. That'd be I'd love to do it. I'll do all the astronauts' portraits.
There you go.
Anything
found
for the
your job.
School day anything for the cause. That would be brilliant. Yeah.
All right, Nick.
Yeah. But and it's incredible that people forget like the strides in technology that, you know, the exploration of the world and even the exploration of space. Even some of the cameras that are used in space exploration have kind of crept their way into filmmaking and design. There was a scene, and if anybody knows the film I'm talking about, please, I don't know, leave a comment or something like that. Can your listeners do that? Can they leave comments?
Sure.
Yeah, just do that. Or just say it out loud at the screen right now. And but there's a scene, the director wanted it entirely lit by candlelight. And if anybody's ever done photography or filmmaking,
I know what movie you're talking about.
To light everything by candlelight is nuts.
It's bonkers.
And so what they did is they actually used this very specific kind of lens that's like ultra sensitive, and it's actually used to locate like stars and planets out in deep space.
Oh yeah.
Just to light the scene of people sitting around a table with candles everywhere having this secret meeting, and it's just the most gorgeous thing you've ever seen in your life. Just these candles sitting around, everybody in costume. And so yeah, this just the idea of being involved in a company that would is on the forefront of technology and the forefront of exploration and science, and seeing where all of those discoveries just kind of spread to throughout the world. That was always something I wanted to do. I mean, as a kid, I just wanted to go out in space and float around. I thought that was really awesome, which is why I'm such a big fan of swimming, because it's kind of the closest you can get to like floating around in space. But now as an adult, I see, you know, all the different facets of science and how they can really benefit people. So take those science classes, kids. Be the first. Be an astronaut. It'd be super cool. So
now more than ever, you can more likely be astronauts now, I think, is the Space Race Part 2, the sequel.
Yeah, trying to build planets on space, or life forms on space.
Yeah.
Like to live
colonies.
On space.
Yeah, to like the whole Mars missions and everything like that.
Yeah, they're getting ready.
Yeah, I mean, if you think about, you know, people like Elon Musk, who is, he hadn't been as successful as he was, he would have just been this crazy person. You know, I mean, and, you know, throughout history, men and women that, you know, had these theories about space and these incredible discoveries, they, you know, I mean, everything from just being completely, kicked out of churches, and some were even put to death put to death because of their theories about the universe and how it was shaped, just went against these religions. But then it turns out it's like, oops, they're right. Oh, sorry, man. So you get this like postmortem pardon. It's like, he was right. Sorry about that. And so it kind of encourages this idea of, do you have an idea? Okay, let's give it a chance. And that's something that, you know, as you know, a filmmaker and an actor, we come across a lot, where someone will have an idea to be like, okay, let's try it. Let's see if it works. Let's explore that. And so, you know, science and discovery and nature, kind of leaks a lot into my work as an artist and a designer is, you know, I got to look to, you try to think of something fantastic and amazing, you know, when you want to entertain people. But if you look at the world and if you look at the universe, it really is that amazing. There's my favorite story to tell people is that there is, when stars die, they, you know, they collapse, they explode, they turn into, you know, white dwarfs, they turn into supernovas, they give off incredible amounts of energy. My favorite is that as the center of the star collapses and turns into this dense ball of carbon that can't be fused and can't create fuel, it's compressed even tighter and tighter, and it's superheated. And then as the star explodes, it leaves behind this rock solid, superheated diamond the size of a planet.
Mm.
And I mean, that's something you would hear in like a DC or Marvel comic. You know, it's like, oh, out there, this entire planet is made of nothing but diamond.
Right.
You're like, oh, that's so far fetched. That's ridiculous. No, that's that happens. It's out there.
Thing.
It is actually out there. So like, it's the reality of it is stranger than fiction.
Oh yeah.
And so yeah, and I love pulling, you know, inspiration from there because the universe we live in really is that amazing. And so, yeah, you know, as a kid, I didn't think about that stuff. I just wanted to float around in space and have a spaceship and
but
shoot
now
lasers.
You could go land on Planet Diamond.
Planet Diamond, the diamond planet. Yeah, absolutely.
That should be a movie.
Planet Diamond. No, it would be absolutely fantastic. You know,
ooh,
it would be
we
super
have a phone
cool.
call.
We do.
Oh, no.
Someone's already has that idea.
Uh-oh. Oh, my gosh.
We got a call from the Diamond Planet telling us
man.
To not let people know
do
that
we take calls
exists.
From listeners?
We can. We have the technology.
Oh, my gosh.
We'll get a... whoever's on the space station, we'll get them to call next time.
Yeah, call down here, guys.
We'll
we're
call
listening.
Up there. We'll figure out their phone number.
We know you're there.
It's
we haven't forgotten
calling.
Yet. Oh my gosh, that would be amazing.
Stop talking
seriously,
about
take
us.
That phone call right now because yeah. I'm ready. I brought a copy of my resume.
How similar, or do you compare the space and water? Do you compare them a lot? Like, how similar do you think they are?
That's it. You know, I would have a really great answer for that, but I have a better answer for that.
Okay.
And it was the whole thing, the argument when, you know, the space program was really, really taken off, like in the, you know, the late 50s and 60s. And people were like, oh, we don't belong in space. And then, you know, they would show that picture of, you know, the blue marble floating in against the black backdrop. It's like, we already are in space.
Right.
So space, yeah, you can absolutely compare them. I mean, astronauts do training in you know, in underwater, like in massive swimming pools and stuff like that. But yeah, like if you go down into caves or deep underwater, you know, the trenches and all of the different energy and plant life that's down there, you wouldn't believe some of the things that you would see. So yeah, I mean, you can absolutely compare. And I think it's good references, you know, just to be able to explore, especially our planet, how diverse and how incredible our Earth is and how lucky we are that it was made in the way that it was. To be able to look at that and say, okay, we see something similar on another planet. We can kind of use it as a reference and sort of baseline it a little bit. Mm-hmm. But I have no doubt that with, you know, the odds of the things that are being created out there and how, and you know, the chances that anything's going to be similar to what we have here we just don't know. It's probably going to be more incredible than anything we could imagine.
Oh, absolutely.
Because every time we discover or confirm something that we think, it always ends up being more incredible than we imagine. So yeah, I mean, you know, exploring underwater. Recently, I was part of a documentary team that was just doing some scuba diving and getting some footage underwater for a documentary about slave trade and transatlantic slave trade and the Underground Railroad. And it was the simplest thing. It was a few ships that were that had sunk to the bottom of Lake Michigan. Mm-hmm. And we were talking about, they said like, oh, because of this particular type of construction and because of this particular type of wood, these ships have survived in such incredible shape down there. And just that blew my mind. And so the idea that there are these incredible life forms in such hostile environments that can find a way to survive, to quote Jeff Goldblum, life finds a way, you know, so it does, man. It really, really does. Life wants to be here. And so,
something for
you know,
nothing, baby.
Yeah, looking at the ocean and comparing it to how we explore space, okay. They're both incredibly challenging and they both offer immense dangers, but the main thing is seeing the diversity and seeing where life can actually survive, like the bacteria on Mars.
Yeah.
You know, it just in this, you know, cold or hot slurry of salt and liquid and gases and mud that would probably be incredibly toxic to a human being, but there's something in that. Mm-hmm. There's, you know, life forms that can build their lives and grow and over a long, long time eventually evolve. Underwater, we see kind of like the same things. We see these creatures that just live by these thermal vents that are toxic and acidic and hot, but they live there.
The most unlivable.
The most, unlivable. You know, human beings, like we got it easy for us, so we think.
Yeah.
But like for them, that's paradise. I mean, there's, you know, free food just coming out of the earth. It's warm, you know, they're with all their friends and, you know, life's easy
just
for them.
Just retire
down to the bottom of the ocean.
Retired. Yeah,
absolutely. No, that's great. But, yeah, I think they offer very, very similar circumstances just in terms of showing us how incredible and how I guess you could say kind of collaborative that the universe can be in creating something. Yeah.
Whether with something or without it.
Yeah. Yeah. Big time.
It's really interesting. I think more people need to take the time, at least just from my opinion, to just take the time and like actually like look at nature and look at the earth, because people go about their day and just like, you know, whatever. And I don't think they really, I mean, I don't know, maybe people do this. I know I don't
do
this.
I hope people do that, yeah.
But I've been trying to be better at it, just like looking at something and being like, wow, like this flower right outside, like it has its own like organisms and plant life and just like, just how things are made, like how you're talking about like the nature and like the underwater, there's so much stuff that we don't know about. And
yeah, it's incredible.
All this stuff is going on and people don't, or at least I need to stop saying people because I can't talk for other people, but I don't.
I will. I'll talk for other people.
Oh, you'll talk for other people? Okay.
Yeah, I'll talk for other people.
I don't realize that all these other like schools of fish and like all these things, like you don't really take the time to think about that stuff until that's you're amazing. Like actually fishing or like watching a movie about it or like seeing this stuff happen and you're like, oh yeah. But I think it's,
there was a really wonderful speech about apples. And apparently, you know, you might be able to name off a handful of different types of apples.
You can eat a different apple every single day for like 3 years.
You could, Like there was thousands of different species of apples, but then, you know, they commercialized it and kind of streamlined it. And they were like, okay, these grow the best. These are the most popular. And those kind of got attention. But, you know, they say like at one point there was an apple named after just about any last name you could think of. So they used to pass out this list to people. It's like, these are all the species of apples that we know of. See if you can find your last name on it.
Yeah.
And it's like people just, they couldn't believe it. All these different types.
What do you think a McLean apple tastes like?
That sounds like it would be an apple.
A McLean apple.
I bet it would. It does sound kind of tasty.
Sounds like Macintosh.
It would be, you know, my luck, it would be like the grittiest, like most tart apple, like anybody.
Well, you've got some grit, kid.
I do, yeah. But like nobody would go to the store to find a McLean apple. It would be one of those like rare ingredients that you get on MasterChef. It would be like the surprise ingredient, or it would be like the McLean apple. And then all the cooks would go, oh crap.
What are we going to do with this?
How am I supposed to use this stupid apple? And it would be like slightly squishy and like not crisp at all. It would just be a not
great
fun
for
apple.
Saucing, I hear though.
Yeah, you put it in a pie, but like not often. You're like, oh, okay.
With some other things.
I don't want a McLean apple pie. It's awful.
Why are you giving yourself such a bad apple?
I'm just being, I'm setting the bar like medium height.
Right.
So then if, you know, I do find a McLean apple and I bite into it, I'll be like, oh, okay. I'll bump that bar a little bit.
I set my standards low, so I'm always surprised.
So you're always surprised.
Yeah.
Keep it simple. Keep it simple. Low, yeah, absolutely.
That's why I always push for low standards.
We can't all be diamond planets.
It's true.
We can't.
Oh, but we could.
We could. You never know. Who knows? Maybe we might find a species.
Well, I was thinking, like, what if, guys, what if outer space is just an outward representation of a map of our own brains?
I would believe that.
Right?
So spiritual, like, there is no space?
Well, like, outer space is mapped out in the same way, like, our thoughts are in our brain.
Well, if you've ever seen a photo of a photograph of, like, the Virgo supercluster, which is essentially just a massive photo of all of the galaxies that are in our closest neighbors, and saying closest neighbor when it comes to galaxy is pretty, that's underestimating, like, big time.
Yeah.
But if you ever look at it and then you expand further to the picture of what they call the known universe, which is just a reading of like all the micro and like gamma radiation that we can detect, it looks a lot like a pattern of neurons.
Mm-hmm.
Things, you know, kind of affecting other things around them and reaching out and, you know, connecting in some way, either through, you know, energy or matter or light. So it is kind of interesting. But again, it comes back to those ideas of those simple patterns. Sometimes the simplest answer, you know, like Occam's razor, sometimes the simplest answer is correct, all things being equal. Yeah, absolutely.
Or I always say there's a simple answer and then there's the complex answer.
Right,
but
absolutely.
There's both answers. Mm-hmm.
But I think taking those little building blocks of simplicity, you know, it's like Legos. You take a few little blocks, you magnify that a million times, you can make incredible structures with it.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of, you know, that's kind of the beauty of energy and atoms and space is it's the simplest thing. It's energy and light.
Yep.
And then look at all the things we can make.
Drop of water and then you got Earth.
Boom.
In like billion years, you get Earth.
Yeah. It's so absolutely incredible. So yeah. I think it's incredible. The human mind is another one of those exploration, the inner space of human beings is one of those things that we understand how it works, but not intricately. No. You know, we couldn't build our own, quote, brain. I know we have computers and supercomputers, and they're amazing, but they pale in comparison to what a human being can do.
Really got to be the magic school bus. Is that the one where swallow, like someone gets swallowed or something,
yeah,
and you like travel inside the body?
Oh, yeah, that's absolutely nuts.
I need to have a person like go in to actually figure everything out, I feel like. Because I mean, you can have like cameras and everything, like go in certain parts, but it's not really like exploring everything.
Dennis Quaid did that in Inner Space, didn't he?
I was going to say.
Inner Space. Well, fantastic
called
film.
It. Yeah.
Great film.
Well, it's just like if you're a microbe, like the human body is like as big as outer space.
That'd be very cool.
True.
I wonder what the spleen is like. We'll never know.
We'll never know.
Microbe Billy.
There's some secret project somewhere that we don't know about where someone's already shrunk down and just taking notes.
Yeah. Well, they got like, they're trying to build robots and to build smaller robots that we can't build as like human beings.
And then absolutely. We eat them?
Yeah. Like nanobots to go in and like fight cancer cells. But they just go in and they just eat them and just like,
cool stuff like that.
Poke them with spears.
I love that stuff.
I feel like I was reading an article about that, but it was not like a robot. It was, what was that? They were like taking, or maybe it was like water. Oh, they were like filling themselves with like this, like, water or something, and it was like exploding these cancer cells, but then they'd be better, but then all of a sudden a couple months later they would come back stronger. So it was remember what it was.
That's a weird thing with medicine. Sometimes you can make it stronger by like hurting it if you don't kill it all the way.
I mean, that's the big unfortunate thing about exploration is that, you know, the first person through the door always gets a little bloody.
It's gonna you
think about all the incredible people that we lost,
sacrificed themselves.
Absolutely. And but I mean, that's the price of exploration. Is sometimes
Apollo 1.
Yeah, like, my gosh.
You kind of know what you're in for.
Yeah, you might be looked at as an outcast. You might be, you know, convicted of, you might be called insane. You might lose your life. You could have an injury, but that's the price of exploration. That's the price of experimentation.
Well, the price of
is that what makes
beings.
It awkward?
What if that's what makes space exploration awkward?
Yeah.
I think so.
Yeah, well, I think that's human beings. They just want to explore no matter what. Mm-hmm. We're willing to commit bodies to it.
We do. I mean, we're naturally curious, and because I think there's a natural dissatisfaction, and dissatisfaction is a symptom of great potential.
Yeah.
If, you know, early human beings were just kind of like, nah, we're good with this. We'll just stay. We wouldn't have developed tools, and we wouldn't have evolved, and we wouldn't have created the civilizations that we have now. Mm-hmm. So there always has to be that feeling of standing wherever you are and then looking beyond to something else, you know,
the
like
power of dissatisfaction.
Yeah. The power, the power of dissatisfaction. Absolutely. It's like, no, I want to learn something more. It's like Jack Sparrow said, he's like, bring me the horizon. You can never get to the horizon. You're always going for it.
Mm. Well, and cause like once you get to that point, you always want to go further.
There's
and
the next thing.
Further.
Yeah. What else? What else are we going to like? It makes me think about Mars is like, once we get to Mars, what are we going to see from there?
Right.
It's going to completely change how we view the world around us, because now there's two worlds around us. And you know, you think about the idea of the multiverse or multiple dimensions, multiple universes. That is now a part of the universe. It's part of the world that we live in. Mm. And so that bubble just keeps on expanding and expanding. And that just leaves more and more to explore. So it's, you know, it's like peeling an onion.
Do you think there really... Oh, go ahead.
No, you go.
Do you think there really is an upside down? Like a universe that's... Like something's going on exactly like we are, and there's like you...
I call it
the
in-between...
In between. Well, there was a song that just came out, Upside Down, by like Lindsay Sterling, and I can't think of the other girl that's singing.
Personally, I think so. Like for me, like the negative space in this universe is the positive space in the other verse.
So like, when something bad is happening here, something good is happening on the other side.
Well, more so in this nature of like matter, or like black holes are sucking like matter from our universe into this other universe. While like
the idea that like a whole universe, you know, could exist inside of that black hole, or it could be, I think so. I think there is. I think it's far different than what we believe it to be.
Right.
Exactly.
Because you know, a black hole could be just about any size. It could. I mean, all black holes are basically just like a pinpoint in space.
Yeah.
So, you know, energy could move and vary anywhere in the world, even inside of, you know, oneself, or out in space, and it could be massive, it could be small. It's all relative. So, but incredible things could happen on a relatively small scale. And they do, as we see with, you know, atoms and microbes and all that stuff. So you go down even smaller and to, you know, to those like Ant-Man, Scott Lang levels. And then you just, it's stuff that we just haven't explored yet.
Into the quantum foam.
Right. It's kind of that same situation like with electrons. If you know where the electron is, you don't know how fast it's going. If you know how fast it's going, or if you know what its velocity is, then you don't quite know where it is. So once we get down to that much, much smaller scale, it's like, again, it's like trying to imagine a million.
Or you know, I heard something where it's like, yeah, if you're looking at an electron moving, is it like, is the electron moving, or is the rest of the universe moving?
Right. And,
in
and
the
so
opposite it, direction.
Again, it's just like, it's one of those challenges that we have to, like, problem solving. And that's where science and creativity have this wonderful relationship. And, you know, to steal a quote from Tim Minchin, who is incredible. And if you haven't heard any of his speeches, go do it. But he said, there's this idea that like art and sciences are these like separate fields. They're not, that's a very, very dangerous, you know, thought. Like athletics and the arts and creativity are all connected in some way. They require creative thinking. They require courage. They require work. And, you know, being able to find that balance, that middle way between all of them is what's going to lead to success. And just understanding that it takes a great amount of labor, and a great amount of commitment in order to do it well, I think is something that a lot of people miss out on. They tend to fall in their niche and stay there, and they think, oh, this is what I do. It's like, nah, man, you gotta pull inspiration from other things. You know, you gotta have these experiences and be ready to boldly go where people haven't gone before, or go where they have to see what they saw.
And then, or maybe they missed something while they were
there. Yeah, exactly. Right? Yeah. Double check your work.
Double check, triple check.
Another cornerstone of science. Double check, question everything, double check the work.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
You have to push yourself, because then that's how you find things and find things that other people like haven't found. So then you can push through.
Yeah.
Push
through. Check it again.
To the other side.
Find more. So. But yeah, it was always a dream, and you know, it still is. I'm always still looking for. I'm kind of hoping for like commercial space travel and being able to go out there and just see it, because there's that interesting that phenomenon where astronauts on Earth want to get back into space really badly, and then once they're up in space, they're looking down at the Earth, and all they can think about is how badly they want to come home.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of what I enjoy about traveling and exploring and seeing the world is. Coming home and being able to talk about all the amazing things that you've seen.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you're just out there by yourself, you know, you're in a vacuum. You can't share. There is no sensation except for yourself. And that's unsatisfying. You want to be able to talk about it with, you know, other people who are going to appreciate it and then maybe inspire them to take that journey with you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if only one person ever went to space and talked about it, everybody would be like, okay, great. We'll take your word for it. But no, people followed in their footsteps. You know, great men and women wanted to go see it themselves. So,
that's absolutely. Right. I don't believe them. I'm going out there myself.
I don't believe it. Yeah.
I'm going out there.
And then you have flat earthers building balloons with cameras and then going, oops.
Whoops.
It's like, told you.
Told you. So,
yeah.
I mean, do you have any other advice that you would give our listeners in regards to... I don't know, anything like finding like space or just in general, like
the biggest thing that in becoming like a freelance artist was I found myself enjoying research more. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, the University of YouTube is fantastic. Reaching out to individuals that are specialists in their field. They love to talk about the things that they work on. Like, by all means, pick their brains. So if you're curious about something, go find where it starts. Go find the people that make it happen. Talk to them and see how it can inspire what it is that you do. That has been the most satisfying for me. And I think, you know, people, again, with their curiosity and just their ability to learn, it's going to just open up that bubble and open up the world.
Open up the world. I like it.
Absolutely.
Well, this is Life is Awkward on River West Radio. If you want more information on Zacho, put all of his links up on the website. Thanks for listening.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, everyone.